It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, where we take a look at the stories that we're following in the Lakeville Journal for the week. And if we are lucky, we have at the Lakeville Journal, Cynthia Hofsmeister. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning.
And reporting live, isolating at home, Janet Manco. Janet.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That is pretty impressive.
All right. Well, we got that done. All right. Right to the front pages. And Cynthia, you know, you have a story on the Sharon Healthcare Center, and at least two or three times a day, and you cover this in the story, and I hope people read it, I get calls. Do the numbers at the Sharon Healthcare Center include people from Sharon, or is it people from all over the place? And I explain that when COVID-19 patients are admitted anywhere, it's their legal residence, and the Sharon Healthcare Center might have anywhere from 40 to 50 or 60 residents, but if it lists seven, those are seven people that are from the Sharon area. And your story, which is a comprehensive story on the Sharon Healthcare Center, explains that and explains a little more as well.
Well, thank you for saying that. And we spoke to Sawyer Thornton, who is a local girl. I know I keep saying that, but I think it's important for people to know, because there's been so much anxiety about this sort of, I think Sharon Healthcare and Athena have been characterized as kind of these corporate monoliths that are imposing something unwanted on the community. And I think it's a good reminder that that Sawyer grew up in Sharon, has been working there for many years, has risen through the ranks, and is now the administrator, and is really, for a young person, showing great courage and responsibility, and has been a great, super transparent correspondent for us on what's happening there, and gave us some very good numbers, because there had been a story in the Poughkeepsie Journal last week that I'd seen saying states are not being transparent about the number of people at the nursing homes and who has COVID and who doesn't, and Governor Lamont and Maria Horn have been extremely responsible about sending out those numbers every week so that you can see them, and Sharon Healthcare Center kept coming up as having seven COVID-positive patients in the 88 beds. So we know that that's not a correct number, because it's a recovery. It's a state-designated recovery center. And Sawyer very openly said, we have 59 patients at the moment. There were 17 who were about to be, or seven who were about to be transferred out as we were speaking. And really good statistics in here. If you're anxious or worried about what's going on, the rate of recovery is much higher than, you know, there have been some losses, sadly. As far as we can tell, there's been no local deaths from COVID in our. There's been at least one in Dutchess County, but I've been checking in with our funeral directors, and as far as I can tell, there are none.
Yeah, there's no. Yes. There is absolutely nobody. There's been two deaths in Canaan, but that's not associated with any healthcare centers. But there have been no deaths in the Sharon Healthcare Center or in Sharon proper.
Sharon Hospital, right.
Yeah.
So a really good interview with Sawyer again, and a good update on what's going on there. And my favorite part of the story was when she said, you know, it was hard for our staff when we first started being a COVID recovery center, but they're healthcare workers and they're doing what they're trained to do, which is to, if you want to just plunk some money down on the table, that'd be great. We have customers here. sorry.
You can always buy the paper at the building. That's where Cynthia is.
You guys, oh, you're there. Okay. Yeah, if you could drop the money on the table, that'd be great. Thanks so much. So I love that when she talked about people who have been recovering, she called them our graduates, and what a wonderful way to have graduates at this time of year.
You know, what confuses the story is the horror stories that have come out of New York and out of Connecticut as well, and Massachusetts and the country, because nursing homes in general have not done a great job in informing families, we're not talking locally, but in general across the country, about when members die of COVID-19. They just haven't. For some reason, that thing has slipped through the cracks, not only here in the tri-state area, but locally, but nationally. So that's been the confusing part for people when they look at senior. And what can you do? It's a pandemic. Rules are being made as it's going along.
Right.
That's what, you know, now that the rules are made, if there's another pandemic, at least there's going to be things, structure in place to deal with it. It's unfortunately a learning experience for everybody.
Thank you for saying that. I think that's so true.
It's for everybody. And you know what? Everybody has a right to be on edge, because you just don't know. But you don't just trying to stay as calm as possible, really.
Not blame.
And I will go over to the Sharon Hospital because every 2 weeks we deal with Dr. Mark Herko. He called in last week and he's going to call in again today. I think the Sharon Hospital has just done an amazing job keeping that hospital from having COVID-19 spread throughout the hospital. You can have only one little mistake and a disaster can develop, and that has not happened at Sharon Hospital. And yes, they have had a lot of COVID patients through their facility.
Right, but a fairly low number now. Yeah. And Dr. Herko, again, a very calm, very transparent presence, always answers the phone when we call him, which we deeply appreciate, and really wants to get the information out to the public. So he's got information on the numbers there. But he said something interesting, which is, and I'm sure he's probably said this to you too, they're concerned that that people are scared to come to the hospital right now, and that there is a 62% drop in visits to the emergency department. And he said, you know, the problem is that people, it's not like magically everybody's healthy. It's that situations where people might have come to the hospital, they're staying home now and potentially letting things get worse. And so I think at this point the numbers are fairly low at Sharon Hospital. I think that, as you said, they're doing a great job of making sure that people do not get infected within the building. If you have an area of concern, especially when it's probably pretty hard to get hold of your physician and get a visit, don't be afraid to come to Sharon Hospital. They are more than happy to take you in the emergency department and would rather get you before your problem turns into something major that perhaps requires surgery.
Now, I don't want to delve into this story because there's other stories, but you've got a good story also that you did on COVID testing and medication updates in our area. But I don't want to once again turn this into a totally COVID thing because there are other things to talk about.
Right.
And the big one is that we will see a rematch between Maria Horn and Brian Oler in the 64th district. As well, we knew Maria was going to run. Brian earlier on said he was not going to run, but he has managed to find a way to fit this in his schedule. Especially, he'll be able to maintain his stewardship at the Charlotte Hungerford Hospital, and he has now entered the race again to run.
Right, and you know he was a very lovely rep, very caring and compassionate, and of course Maria has done a phenomenal job as our state rep. So you know, nice to have choices. And we do have information on the person that's running against Craig Miner for the 30th Senate. We're hoping to have an interview and profile with both of them for next week's paper.
All right. Now, along with Sharon Hospital getting a great rating last week, Noble Horizons got a real nice honor, and they also released information on COVID-19 as well.
Right. And so there's an organization, this CMS, which I guess grades or facilities for Medicare and Medicaid, and they gave Noble Horizons a 5-star. And just as that happened, people started passing around this rumor saying that there had been staff with a COVID diagnosis at Noble. And so Bill Pond, who's the administrator, and again, Noble Horizons, not even really on the list that I've seen of the nursing homes. They've done a very good job of having no cases. Bill Pond immediately sent out a letter to the community and sort of said, you know, here's what's happening. And again, transparency, I think, at this time is extremely important.
You know, when I spoke to Gear just yesterday, as a matter of fact, the CEO, the head there,
Kevin O'Connell,
and he released something which showed you how obviously tight that campus is run. There was a patient that came into Gear Nursing that was COVID, but they isolated them, and they've since recovered and left. And that's that campus, more than any, I think, with Gear Village, Gear Nursing, and with Beckley House, would be a campus that they've done a spectacular job there as well.
Right. A lot more public access on the campus, too, because they had the cafe, a wonderful cafe, and then the YMCA. So they really locked down very fast, very early, and have done, again, a phenomenal job of keeping it from spreading.
All right, and the reason I wanted to move on is every year Region 1 schools honor student achievements. They have annual awards, and they did that this year. You don't want that to get lost in this COVID-19 crisis, like you don't want the graduation, whenever that happens, however it happens, to get lost. But a nice story on all the Region 1 schools and the students that were named with the annual awards.
And actually, we didn't know because the boards of education have been super focused on important things like the budget and when they're getting back into school. And Patty Ravezzi, who is the secretary at Cornwall Consolidated School had emailed and said, I hope that this doesn't get overlooked with everything that's going on. The superintendent awards were just put out. So this is a countywide, all the Litchfield County superintendents reach out to the schools and say, who's your top eighth grade student? And it's not just a grades thing. It's also, you know, how they do in terms of their ability, how they relate to other people at the school. It's usually somebody who has some kind of meaningful off-campus extracurricular activity, somebody who's good at sports, who's somebody who's good at academics. But overall, it's always somebody who everybody who reaches out to everybody and is a good friend to everybody and respectful of staff. So we have one student from each of the eighth grades, our six elementary schools, and then two students from Housatonic Valley Regional High School. And we did, because we normally take photographs ourselves, we asked them to take a selfie or have a parent send in a photo. We got some beautiful photos, and we asked each of the students to give a little explanation of what they think of distance learning. And we got them from the elementary students, but not from the high school students. And Janet, do you want to talk at all about the senior photos this year?
Right. It's a tradition, excuse me, at the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News, actually, to run photos of the graduates every year at graduation time. So we weren't sure how that would go this year, but we have heard from the schools already that they would like us to do that again, and we already have photos from one of the schools, so we will be doing that so that the students who are graduating will be recognized in the paper as always, and we look forward to doing that.
All right, and hopefully, probably within the next week or two, we'll hear from the Region 1 Board and the ABC Committee on what's planned for graduation at Housatonic Valley Regional High School, because there's always a lot of questions asked about that. On the pages, though, and this is probably the simplest budget season for you to cover, Cynthia, in a long time.
Our reporters love quarantine.
Because Cornwall, Sharon, Falls Village all approved their budgets. Falls Village, of course, had a huge increase with Region 1 spike. But it's been much easier on the reporters. Not so for people that like to go to the meetings and actually be there. But budgets, more budgets.
But you could argue that as with some of the events at our local libraries, for example, I think there's a certain number of people who just for whatever reason can't get out there physically but can actually log in on a Zoom meeting. So all of the public hearings, all the conversations have been available on Zoom and the Internet. So you can definitely go and check on your budget. But as Marshall said, most of them are getting passed. I think Falls Village still has another step to go. And Region 1 passed its budget with a huge imbalance for Falls Village and an increase of $200,000 for the smallest school. And then Cornwall, which is, I think, the second smallest school, had a big decrease this year. And, you know, I said to Patrick Sullivan, our reporter, boy, that's a huge hit for a small school like that. And he said, you know, it all evens out over time. It's a percentage thing, not just the number of students you have in Region 1, but the percentage of the overall number of students is how they calculate that.
All right, nice story on restaurants supporting residents and residents supporting restaurants. I've spoken to several restaurants, and they are, with their takeout service and curbside pickup and everything, they are maintaining their bank balances, which is basically what they really want to do to get through this whole pandemic.
And as Alyssa Potts from the Fife and Drum said, we managed to pay off our bar bill. But the Fife and Drum, from the very beginning of this, Alyssa and George Potts have been very active in making sure that the Kent Food Bank is supplied and that people who are in need are able to get food. They're very community-oriented. There's something that the COG, which is the organization of the 21 first selectmen from Litchfield County towns, had started in 2017 called the Food Hub. And their idea was, farmers are working really hard to raise the food for us, and they're trying to find the best model for distributing that food. CSAs is, you know, has been sometimes successful, sometimes not. But what the hub was trying to do was set up a central distribution point for farmers so that they could bring in their vegetables, whatever, get paid for it, and then it could be distributed from that hub. So six restaurants in the area, most of them in other parts of Litchfield County, are taking part in the hub, including Fife and Drum. And there's also a new program that Hiram Williams from the Chamber of Commerce helped start. And that is an opportunity for restaurants to provide meals to High Watch, which is in the middle of a huge expansion that has been somewhat controversial quietly in Kent. So, again, a good neighbor move from High Watch at a time when maybe they could use a little community support.
I want to move on to the obituary page because...
A lot of big obituaries this week.
Yeah, well, the big one is Bob Drucker. Bob Drucker was just an institution on that corner.
In North Canaan.
His shop sustained a couple of fires and still maintained to do what they did for many, many years. And he passed away, of course, on Thursday, March 19th. Bob Drucker. He will be remembered for a long, long time in our area.
Right, and Don Reed Sr., if you turn to the other part of our obits page, very stalwart fire volunteer and father of Darren. And Don Reed, very important person in town. And I just had word that Dusty Sandmeyer passed away in Cornwall, so we'll hope that we have information.
Those are significant names in significant communities when you mention that. Really pretty amazing. I want to move on to the Viewpoint page. On the Viewpoint page and the editorial page, the editorial, of course, thank you to our local medical leadership.
Right. We thought this was a good time to recognize the fact that as we do look at what is happening in nursing homes, hospitals, medical care across the country, our local leaders in medicine have really been transparent, dedicated, professional. We feel very fortunate that we've been having direct communication with them, and as we mentioned, both through print journalism and radio interviews that you've been doing, Marshall. It's not an easy thing for them to do in the middle of a pandemic, but they make it a priority, and we want them to know that that is noticed and appreciated, and we talk about that.
You know what's interesting, Janet, and you're right. In the beginning, I think because with of course Nuvance having so many hospitals in the system, at the very beginning, they weren't really updating us, but then once they got things in order, they have been constantly updating us, and that is all the healthcare facilities in our area, keeping us abreast of what's going on, and that helps calm fears.
And I think that one thing that people have done really well is they've made a point of communicating in a way that perhaps wasn't as prevalent pre this situation. So I think that that's that helps. And then the people who are responsible for getting that information out there are also there and doing their job. So that's not a bad thing.
And I love the cartoon by Peter Steiner. Excuse me, are you in line? You have to see it to understand it, but it's true.
It's really true. We've all been there.
Sometimes if you're in a place, you just don't know where the line begins.
That's right. It's like, and it could be 100 feet back from where you think you want to go, but you can't.
Down
really
by the
tell.
Rice. Yeah, no, I just had a moment like that not so very long ago.
And I'm looking at the letters to the editor, and you have lots of letters to the editor, and one of them is from Carol Lally, who we know. About part-time residents, they care about their communities as well.
That's right. This is an ongoing discussion. We welcome this discussion. We want to know everybody's opinions, and we're happy to have this letter from Carol Lally, who talks about the fact that there's been this perceived dichotomy among people who are part-time residents and full-time residents, and she explains why part-time residents care about their communities as much as anybody else and what's behind it. So give that a read, and don't miss Jack Gordon's letter on the fact that he fought for the USA and believes in it. Mike Parmalee talks about One More Front Line, and he also talks about his experience out trying to purchase things and being aware that there is a dichotomy as well. Volunteer ambulance squads and... Jamie Casey writes about them and how they are here for us, and that is so important to know, too. And Bernie Ray makes an appeal to Ben Metcalf in Canaan.
And on the Viewpoint, Carol Asher's Whose Lives Matter and What Are They Worth to Our Leaders, and Chris Powell, and this is a great, Do State Legislators Have Courage of Grocery Clerks?
That's right, and nobody can state this quite as well as Chris. He's blunt and smart, and we are glad to have his words on this. Just reading that headline, you have to read on, so I hope our readers do that. And we also have a letter from Michael Motion. Here's another lead-in that should make you want to read it. Why would you head straight for the moose?
And turning back the pages, Mr. Frank Scribner was taken to Pittsfield for treatment of the stomach, an obscure trouble from which he has suffered much, particularly of late. It's hoped he will be much relieved from turning back the pages 100 years ago.
Don't forget little Thelma. Little Thelma Ham is recovering from an attack of diphtheria.
Yeah, so,
great.
All right. Well, let us move on to Compass as we take a look at that page.
So a beautiful photo that our reporter from the Military News, Caitlin Lyle, took. Caitlin, a Sharon native. And an almost eerie photo of Millerton, which is a town where you generally have to fight for parking space, completely empty. And she really caught it in a beautiful Hopper-esque way. And we had received an email from Ed Downey from the Northeast Historical Society saying, you know, please document this moment in our history, because, for, you know, Janet and I are both big history buffs for the region and love to go back and look at some of the papers, for example, from 1955 from the big flood that destroyed Winsted and had such a devastating impact on so much of the state. Not because it makes us happy, obviously, but because it's just fascinating to see those moments that really changed our world. And so this, of course, is one of those moments. And so the Northeast Historical Society, the Dutchess County, and the New York State Historical Society, the Connecticut Historical Society are all asking people to take photographs, take pictures of signs, take pictures of empty streets, take pictures of whatever you see that you feel like captures this moment. We have information on how to send information to them. We also have a couple of art galleries that are doing COVID-themed art shows. One is Standard Space in Sharon, where they're posting images online that artists are doing in quarantine, and then Henry Klimowitz at the Rhee Institute is doing something where they're burying little boxes in the ground, and people can social distance and walk through the fields behind the big farm there and see what people are doing. We have a book review from Carl Salater, who's such a delight. He's a great writer, but he also writes like an artist and just has this lively, interesting review of a book that he loved about science. Says it opens your mind like a can of peaches. And then we had received a bunch of emails from organizations that were doing Shakespeare-themed events, so many that it seemed like, I guess, people really are interested in spending some COVID time learning about Shakespeare. As our reporter Patrick Sullivan keeps saying, he's planning to reread all of Shakespeare. I don't think he started yet. But there is a lot of Shakespeare around. Some of it we've missed, and I want to say to arts organization, if you have an event, don't let us know about it 2 days before. We need at least a week's advance notice so we can get it in the paper. So there were a couple of Shakespeare events that have already come and gone, but Center for Performing Arts in Rhinebeck has some things online. Shakespeare and Company, obviously, in Lenox, Mass., has some things, including a new book by Tina Packer. But a lot of Shakespeare available from the world's great Shakespeare libraries, and they're putting a lot of it online for free right now, including the Folger Shakespeare Library, brought to you by that delicious instant coffee, and the Globe Theater in England, and the famous Stratford Festival in Canada.
And before we go, I just want to mention once again the flyover in Sharon today, about 11, in between 10 after 11 and 11:20, the C-130 Hercules from the 103rd Airlift, a salute to healthcare workers. Also, an interesting thing going on tonight at the movie house, they have one of those Zoom gatherings for the mindfulness of movement.
Mindfulness movement.
It's at 6 o'clock, and if you want more information on how you can join in that, just go to moviehouse.net.
And many thanks to all of our advertisers for continuing to support us and for the beautiful banner that we have once again this week.
Yeah, you need advertising support. We need underwriting support. We need donation support. And people have come through. They should continue to keep come through if you want current and up-to-date news in your local area.
We had a nice ad from the Gilson that we want to thank them. People might look at it and say, why are they advertising that they're still closed? But they're supporting us,
yeah.
And so we deeply appreciate that.
All right, guys, stay healthy, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. You can find them on the web, of course, at tricornernews.com.